Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here Tuesday, September the 7th, 2021, 12 minutes past the hour. And today we're recounting the tale of the Great Race Pizza Shop with Bob Welsh and Eric Warren. Bob wrote the book, Three Pies Hot, which we'll have some more copies to give away here at the station. That'll be a lot of fun. We gave away quite a few copies of those back in early August. Now, we do have some pizzas here in the studio today. That is different than before. The actual Great Race Pizzas are here. So if anybody would like a piece, let us know. Give us a buzz here, 740-383-9944. They'll be here this afternoon, and we'll keep them cool, and then you can just warm them up and have some great pizza. All kinds of different toppings here. A throwback to the days of the late 1970s, early 1980s, and I just had my first taste. Very, very good pizza. Bob, tell us about the pizza.
Well, one of the things that separated Marion from the other cities was one of the favorite toppings that we had available in Marion was the yellow banana peppers. And I got to, you know, and I said I've worked in Findlay in the other stores from time to time. And the quantity of pizzas going out the door in Marion with yellow banana peppers far exceeded any of the other cities that we were in. And so that was a favorite topping in Marion, you know, pepperoni mushroom, of course, but everybody had to have banana peppers. And actually, one of the favorite ones, which I made, you know, was beef, onion, and banana pepper. You know, that seemed to be a hot seller in Marion. But, you know, one of the things that set Marion apart, and this drove, you know, one of our pizza makers crazy, is that we'd have people call in, and they wanted green peppers, but they always said mangoes.
Now, see, I've had this conversation on the air.
All right.
Now, I know what a mango is.
Good.
Now, I've been to the grocery store. It's a fruit.
I can have somebody explain it to you. I'll call them up on the phone, and they'll give you a good lecture on it.
No, I have went to people, and I've said, you understand, when you call a pizza place, and that seems to be the only area this happens, but if you say mango, they do know what you're talking about. It's a green pepper.
That's what I'd learned very quickly, you know, that they wanted the green pepper. But, you know, and I would give them the green pepper. But we had one individual who believed in lecturing everybody who called in, a mango is a tropical fruit, and we do not have mangoes.
Do you know how this happened?
I don't know. I'll turn to Eric, you know, a Marion resident.
Do you know
native. Why do they call mango
to, green to this pepper? Day, you could call Domino's and order a pizza with mango. Because green peppers are one of my favorite things on pizza. I picked up one here. It's delicious. But I like mangoes on a pizza. Not mangoes, green peppers. But if I call Domino's and I say, give me a cheese and mango pizza, they'll give it to me. There's no question. They know that that's a green pepper.
Yeah, I have no...
Without a lecture.
Without a lecture, yes.
We love lectures. But I have no clue. I do recall my grandmother and my father, who had a very large garden, always calling green peppers mangoes. And I think it might be a local colloquialism. My father also sold firewood in the winter, and we called it a rick, and it was basically a pickup truck load. But we wondered where the term rick came from, and that was back in the late 60s. And my sister did a great deal of research and found that it was pretty much just an Ohio term. Nobody outside of Ohio even knew what a rick was, and it's a half of a cord of firewood. And another local colloquialism is, and we believe it came from the rickers that made the charcoal, but that was our own deduction. I've not gotten a confirmation of that. We also have a tendency, or my father did, and possibly my generation, to call 309 Route 30. And I guess it was the old Route 30. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Well, you know, and one that developed was 423, was 23.
Right.
But not anymore.
Yeah, and they used to call it Old 23, and or just 23, and you could get very lost and confused.
Now, this is very, very good pizza, and it, no joke. I mean, I would tell you if it was...
iffy. But the big pizza seller, now I would say here in Marion, local, is probably Tubby's. Tubby's does a lot of business over here. This, it doesn't remind me of Tubby's, but it's got its own flavor. And that's why I think Tubby's does very well. And this pizza has its own flavor. So without giving us the recipe, Bob, what is different about this?
And one thing, if you look at the bottom of your, you'll see like a hatch pattern there. These pizzas are baked on screens. And that allows, you know, the dough to rise differently. A lot of places, and I'm not criticizing anybody, but there are 100 different ways to bake a pizza. You have some that might bake them on cornmeal or just on a flat pizza pan, you know, maybe buttered or with olive oil. And anymore, it seems to be that, you know, they put them on a conveyor belt and run them through a conveyor belt oven. And one of the things that made us different, you know, I think was just how we baked it. The ingredients you could probably find on most cookbooks. I mean, it's standard, you know, flour, you know, water, yeast, you know, sugar, salt. You know, and then we would vary the sugar content a little bit, you know, because that was the browning agent. And so you could always get a browner pizza, but just putting a little extra sugar in it, in the dough. And then the sauce, in preparing for this, I went back and was looking for the dough recipe, and I found a notebook that I had kept in 1978, and it actually had the sauce recipe on here as well as everything else.
It doesn't taste like a sweet sauce.
No.
It's just a good sauce.
There was no sugar in it. Let me see if I can find the recipe. It was tomato sauce. Here. Sauce, 10 cans of paste, 10 cans of sauce, 5 buckets of water, and then the seasoning mix. And I guess they put that in the mixer. And
now, how much is a bucket?
Eric?
I don't recall, but it was, I believe, one of those white tubs that we actually kept the sauce in.
Possibly.
And this was written specific to the equipment we were using at the time.
So I have to ask this. I assume you don't have a pizza oven in your house.
Correct.
So how did the pizzas that you brought today come about?
There's this company called Pampered Chef. they make pizza stones. I imagine other companies do, but they make pizza stones. And I have a 14-inch pizza stone round. And so I put that in the oven last night, and I got up at 4:30 and turned the ovens on this morning, and so it was fully heated up. And then I had a second pizza stone made out of a couple of individual bricks, and so they were baked on stones as we did in the old days. And I did have some pizza screens. The trouble is I had 14-inch screens and 12-inch boxes, and so the reason the pizzas aren't exactly perfectly round is that I had to do a little adjusting in order to downsize to get them to fit in the boxes there. But otherwise, you'd have like a 12-inch screen, and you could take the crust of the edge and work from there. But I had a 14-inch screen. I had to downsize to 12, and so a little modification there after 40 years.
Now, when you tasted it this morning, did it taste like what you remember?
Well, we did a test run last week sometime. I dug out my little black notebook here and found the recipes and everything, and I had Eric and his wife over for dinner, and don't look at my little black book. He looked at my little black book. Yeah. Anyway, so we did a test run, and things weren't, they were good, but they weren't exactly perfect, and Eric helped hit a few of the key points, as well as, you know, the placement in the ovens and so forth and everything. And so we tweaked it, and then I made a pizza a couple days later with the tweaks, and it was just like old times. And so this is very similar to that.
Mm. It tastes great. Now, you brought some things with you today. It looks like a picnic table over there, a tablecloth.
Well, I brought... And people, I'm glad this is the radio, because
no, this is a good hat.
This is what do you call the style of hat? Kind of a
clown.
It was called the clown hat by the employees.
Actually,
that was the worn by employees.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And this is what you were required to wear, and you know, and this is what caused a lot of angst early on, is that for the people who can't see it, it is a red and white
Like a tablecloth.
Yes, it probably made out of old tablecloth material, and it was hard to get the guys to wear it. Even the women didn't. Well, I don't want to wear that. It's like a fucking hat. You know, and you'd get the drivers going out there, and, you know, some of, you know, manly men out there, you know, we had, you know, people, you know, driving Harleys, you know, for a living and everything, and I ain't wearing that damn hat. You know, and they'd put on their black cap when they got to the door. And it caused a lot of angst, and this is the one that, you know, I was certain that one of the employees was flushing them down the toilet, but that was another story. But they're just hiding them, and so there's not very many of these left, And when I was talking to the person who helped do some of the design on the book, I mentioned these, you know, stupid hats. And so they ended up designing the front cover of the book to match the hat.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's where that comes from.
Very nice.
But after these hats were pretty much destroyed by the drivers, then we got into red hats and white hats. And it didn't seem to matter what color the hat was anymore after that.
But, you know, I think that first hat there, which, again, now if you have a... Because you probably just had your big Labor Day celebrations. If you have a red check tablecloth, we've all seen them, that's what it looks like. But it's a kind of a... What do you call that? A beanie hat? A cap hat? It's not like a...
It's not a baseball cap.
No, it's not a baseball cap.
It's very similar to, like, the old Oilsome... advertising on the old oil cans back in the 20s and 30s,
yeah.
The mechanics would wear a hat like that along with a jumpsuit, and Bob still has a jumpsuit that basically finishes off that lovely fashion scenario.
It's a really, really big thing.
Yeah, well, my wife spent last night washing it, and after several runs through the washer, it was still so dirty it couldn't be worn.
Now, as far as the gold editions of the book, what's different from the gold edition to the regular edition?
It has a gold sticker on it.
Well, there you go.
They're numbered to 500 in gold, as well as autographed, and so all these are autographed.
Oh, very nice.
In gold. It was kind of a little gimmick that the publisher came up with, which didn't really fly very far.
Well, not a bad gimmick. Let's go to the phone lines here. If we can get it up on the phone, go ahead, caller.
I got a question.
Go right ahead.
In the movie The Jerk, Steve Martin was a gas station attendant. Is that the kind of hat they're talking about?
Yeah, that style of hat, yes.
Okay.
Yes, well, that's
that style of hat. You want to talk into the speaker, I know that's...
Yeah, I think that would have been pretty...
What can I say?
I think that would have been pretty cool to wear. I always found them pretty neat, but... So it was pretty much made out of a red and white tablecloth.
Basically, I mean, the style of the hat is nice, but
right.
The red and white pattern was not a favorite. Later, we had the same style with white and red and blue, mm-hmm. But the red and white checkered hat was not favored by the male employees in particular.
Maybe Bob can send us a picture of the hat. We'll put it up on the website, yeah. And then people can get a look at it.
That'd be neat. And I got one more question. Where was the Quonset hut at that caught fire? You said it was on 309
Across
East,
from
right?
Rex Welding.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Next to Curtis Ian.
The last time I was out there, it was just a big concrete pad.
And it still may be. I'm trying to think what the heck's out there. But I mean, I drive by it every day, but I can't remember in that area.
Now, did you ever have the Amazing Race Pizza? Great.
Absolutely.
Race Pizza. That television
sure
show has ruined me.
Sorry.
Yep. My mom and dad used to order. That was the only place they ordered. I was maybe 7, 8 years old, and I always hated that we'd go to bed and they'd order pizza. Gah! Makes me mad.
Well, I did. We could send a few pieces back for you if you want to come in later on today.
I wish I could, but I ain't going to be able to. But I tell you what I remember as a kid, it was delicious.
It's good pizza.
Thank you very much.
I can vouch. Hey, thanks for calling.
Have a good day, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye. And phone lines are open. If you want to call in, go right ahead. I know there are a lot of... I know one of your former drivers listens to the show. He came in, and if he'd like to come in and get a piece of pizza, feel free. 740-383-9944. Give us a buzz here if you have any questions about the Great Race Pizza Shop and the Three Pies Hot Book here in Marion, a big success for about 5 years. 740-383-9944. But that's the hat. Now, Bob, you brought some. Are these ads in?
I brought in the grand opening ad for the Marion store. Which was in the Marion Star.
In the Marion
Star.
And
then a similar grand opening ad for Findlay, as well as the first Columbus store.
Well, this is a big ad in the for the Marion paper.
It was, and it's actually been reduced a little bit there, but it was a big ad. And so you can see the prices at the time there, which was, which even though they seem reasonable this time, with like I think it was $5.20 for a 16-inch pepperoni, that was still probably about 10% higher than the competition. One, because you know we needed to cover the cost of the ingredients. I mean, there was quality.
$4.30 for a 16-inch pizza, cheese pizza.
Cheese pizza.
Hey, there you go. Now, what would that be today? Would that be on par with what a large pizza would cost today?
I asked myself that same question last night, so I went on to Domino's, and you can't find just a plain menu like you see in front of you there. You have to go through all these, you know, checkouts and everything, but the Domino's closest to me in Columbus had a for $16.99 with a 16-inch pepperoni, and that's what they call their extra large now. And then, so, basically $17 for the same pizza.
Now, do we know about the number now? Do we know who has the number?
We've never called it.
Now, is there a reason?
Well, I figure if it belongs to somebody, it's probably some individual who's tired of being bothered all these years.
Well, you know what? Hold on here. We got a phone. We'll find out who's got this number. I'm sure they'll appreciate this.
All right.
Well, go ahead. We'll check this out here. Now, I'm not going to say the number over the air because we don't want to give anybody's number out here. But I've got in front of me here. Let's see what we can figure out here this morning.
Now, I'll start apologizing.
It's okay. Let's see here. We'll see if anybody... You know, the old landlines, it may be a discontinued number at this point.
We're sorry. The number you have dialed has been changed.
I think it's no longer in service at this point.
This recording in error.
Isn't that it? We'll give it one more shot here to make sure I dialed it correctly. Let's give it a shot here. Okay, we got 740 area code now. Boom, boom, boom. Let's see
here. Then we can play the commercial then.
Yeah, we got to do that. Yeah, not in service.
Well, back then it was actually a 614 area code. You might try that.
Oh, you think it was 614?
Yeah, try 614.
Oh, that's right. This area was 614 for a while. We did away with that. So many other things.
Now you're going to annoy somebody else.
You know, everybody's got cell phones now, so these 383 exchanges have went by the wayside, unfortunately. Let's see here if we get anything. Oh, something's ringing here. Maybe we'll get something this time. Da-da-da. 614 today would be outside of Marion, so...
Primarily this Franklin County region.
Yeah, I think so. So we'd be calling somebody in Columbus right now.
Oh, we had a Columbus store.
Your call is being forwarded to a Mitel voicemail system.
Oh, this will be good.
Leslie Ivory.
Well, Leslie Ivory has it here.
The message at the tone.
Okay, here we go.
You may
don't
hang up
Leslie.
Or press pound.
Related to Julia.
Hey, Leslie, I want two large pepperoni pizzas and a sub and ad here I see of Coca-Cola, if you could send that on over. No, Leslie, this is WWGH Radio here in Marion. I just wanted to let you know you have the old phone number of a very, very, very well-known pizza place here in Marion, and we just wanted to check the number out and see who had it now. So you can give us a call back if you want to. If you have any questions, 740-383-9944. Thanks, Leslie. Bye-bye. There we go. Leslie has it.
I'd be really curious to find out if she's related to Julie Ivory, another...
Local celebrity.
Local celebrity disc jockey.
Oh, here comes a phone. Maybe this is Leslie calling back. She's saying, who's calling my house? Go ahead, caller.
All right, I got one more question.
Go ahead.
Before I get back to work for the great race, guys. I know they'd mentioned they had a driver. I know a guy called in, too. His name was Dom Prater. When I was 18, I lived beside a Dom Prater. I'm just trying to find out, you know, he's gone now, but I'm just trying to find out if it's the one that I knew.
What did Dom Prater look like? Did he have a distinguishing feature?
A woman named Shirley Prater, and I thought he worked at B.F. Goodrich also.
I remember the name because the Prater and everything, but as I recall, he's probably about 6 foot, medium build individual, dark hair, or brownish dark hair. But I can't tell you much more than that. I didn't know him personally as to, you know, family or sisters, anything of that nature.
Right. The one I knew also when I lived beside him, it was there on Main Street by the old Clark Station across from Nichols Bakery. But I thought he lived there for years, but I know him and his wife Shirley passed away, and I know he had a boy named, I think, Don Jr. But anyway, that's what I was calling. I was just trying to learn something about a neighbor that I never knew.
I'm sure it was the same individual, but I cannot tell you anything distinguishing at this point.
Okay.
Thank you.
Other than I know he was a very nice person. You know.
Wasn't he, and his wife.
Yeah.
So, all right, thank you very much.
Not a very common name. Very well could be the same person. So what other ads do we have here?
We have the Findlay Grand Opening, which is similar, although the prices are higher.
I do want to mention there were free balloons for adults and pickups by request in Marion. Now, did you have to give me a balloon? There weren't balloons when you walked in?
No. And we never inflated them. But they're basically your standard, you know, toy balloon. But after they did the ad, Charlie was saying, oh, we're going to get people coming in here trying to cheat us out of balloons. You know, like we have a mad dash on. And they weren't especially, they didn't say great reasons. They were just ordinary balloons that he'd bought a box of 100 of them. And so we never used them. We didn't give anything away during the grand opening. And they sat there until about a year later, a driver discovered them. And he said, well, I'll give out these handful of balloons on deliveries and increase my tips, you know. And so he'd go out, he'd give out balloons, and sometimes he'd get more money or not, I don't know. But at that point, we just wanted to get rid of them, so we didn't really care too much.
Now, over in Findlay, this is interesting. And by the way, if you're wondering here, the Findlay store was located at 1406 North Main over in Findlay.
Old Mascotti's.
There you go. Now, they had an Indy 500 pizza. It was a real pepperoni, mushrooms, onions, green peppers, or mangoes, whatever you want to say, and Italian sausage. Now, a 16-inch Indy 500 pizza was $8.65.
And that's what we made for you over there as well.
That's an Indy 500. Oh, very nice.
Which is probably the most common five toppings for any pizza chain. And you'll see that in most of the places. And like the ad says there, most people consider that their supreme. That was only halfway through our toppings. We had a total of 12 toppings. And so when you ordered everything, or even everything but anchovies, it was a big, thick, heavy pizza. And we had to do those on extra thick crust, otherwise it just wouldn't hold up.
Now that is a very good-sounding pizza, and it tastes very good over there as well. Were these ads expensive? Because people now think of newspapers as a bygone thing. This would have been big money back in these days.
It wasn't overly expensive, but it was still pricey, you know, for what it was.
Here we go.
Charlie's favorite thing was whenever he could talk to the newspaper into it, was to run the ad upside down, which most people places didn't want to do. And so we would...
George Kasotis has just walked in the studio. Legendary. Now, George, we gotta get your take here. The amazing, or great, amazing race. Great Race Pizza is in there. Go get a taste and tell us how good the pizza is. The original Great Race Pizza.
There was a variety in there.
And then, George, you're going to come back and join us on the air here.
I was only in the restaurant business about 70 years.
Oh, my goodness.
George, 89. Now, 89 years young, George.
89 and what?
A few months.
I started in the late 30s, early 40s. I was downtown Marion.
I heard your commentary on Turoff, and I was sorry to see him go and everything.
George Turoff was a great man.
Yeah.
Great. You know, people like George Turoff and George Kasotis kept downtown going for many, many years.
George came in 1959 from the old country.
Yeah.
And couldn't speak a word of English. And so it took me 6 years to teach him English. And then we went to get his citizenship. And I was with him beside him.
All right, George, try our pizza because we want to know what you think. George Kasotis is going to be our pizza tester this morning.
My problem with the Turoffs was that we had different hours, and so we could never go there. I mean, we started working at 4 in the afternoon and didn't get off until 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, and it was only a rare occasion that we'd actually get out to get something to eat, and we'd go to Turoffs on extreme rare occasion just because our hours conflicted so much. But it was a good place.
They were at Turoff's and George's restaurants over the years, like the Cafe George, were staples, and we missed that. And I was so sad to see that George, I had just seen George 2 weeks earlier, and one of the parting words, and he had no cane. He was looking good. He was out with his wife, and I said, "How you doing, George?" And he said, "Pretty good for a 91-year-old guy," and he was doing good. You can pull that chair over here, George. That way we'll share the microphone here.
We're standing in front of Judge Smith back in, 1964, 1965, and George went up to get his citizenship, and the judge had the full docket that day, and he said, "Mr. Turoff, I'm going to ask you one question, and if you answer it correctly, I'll give you your United States citizenship." So he said, "How many Supreme Court state justices do we have in the United States?" And I'm standing beside George, and I seen his hand go. I thought he was going to say five. I tapped his shoulder. I said, "Did they fire four?"
You helped George.
I didn't give him the answer. But
you
said,
didn't, but you helped him along.
I said, "Did they fire four?"
Give him the nine.
And he said nine. Damn. And he said, "You got your citizenship."
You got your citizenship.
1964, 1965. That was when George got his citizenship.
Very nice. Now, Bob, what else have we got here today?
Well, I was going to ask, maybe, and George might know the answer to this, whatever happened to the Drum and Bugle Corps in Marion? When we were in town there in the late 70s, early 80s, that was the big event. Bigger than the Popcorn Festival was the Drum and Bugle Corps. And we would have big nights there delivering to all the hotels and motels, and it was a big event in Marion. But it's gone. Now, what happened to it?
Didn't somebody steal a bunch of the equipment, one of the last directors?
Oh, yeah,
big mess.
But, well, it's on for this year.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, it's good. On, and it starts Thursday.
Oh, that's a popcorn. I'm talking about the Drum and Bugle Corps.
Oh, the Drum and Bugle Corps. Oh.
Yeah, I think one of the last directors stole a bunch of the equipment over from the Cadet Hall, and they weren't paying their dues anymore.
That's right, Scott. Yeah, because the Drum and Bugle, it was, because down at the Harding Stadium, all those 20 corps from all over the United States, from California to New York. It was big. It was huge.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that's what happened to them. I think it was in the early 2000s. But they lost the Cadet Hall, and then for a while it became, a karate school, and I believe they do pro wrestling down there.
Yeah. My daughter's in the marching band in her high school, and so we did a lot of events like that. And so I know how big it can be. And it was Marion's activity for, I don't know, at least a week at a time. It was a big event.
Now, George used to dress up in his restaurant with tuxedos and nice clothes. Now, George, would you wear that hat for in a restaurant setting? This is what they used to wear over at the pizza shop.
Oh, yeah, that was nice. I remember that.
Yeah.
Red and white checkered.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
That was the way to go back in those days.
In those days, they had red and white checkered tablecloths.
Yeah, well, people dressed for the part. What we needed. So, you know, Eric, in the end, what are the memories? What comes to you when you think of Great Race Pizza?
The good times. We had great times, a lot of camaraderie. We played a lot of fairly harmless practical jokes. Hijinks, practical jokes on each other.
One that I pulled on Eric early on, he had been spiking my Coca-Cola with white vinegar for some time, you know, and
that was hot pepper juice.
Well, whatever.
Banana peppers.
Whatever.
The vinegar was actually in your water, you went to after
that
you
was
got
it.
The Coke.
You know, and so
In the late 30s, all my cousins were in New Jersey, all along the coastline of New Jersey, and these Italians came over, and the first bread that they did, they put tomato sauce on it, and guess what they called it instead of pizza? Tomato pies.
Yeah.
That was the first pizza in America. It was called tomato pies, and it was in New Jersey that that started, because there was a bunch of Italian immigrants came over.
I remember in Lee Iacocca's autobiography,
he
mentioned that, and he said, you know, if he had a choice, other than the auto industry, he would have went into the pizza industry because he didn't know how big it was going to be at that time.
Hmm. Now, what was the practical joke?
In order to get back at Eric for the white vinegar, I thought somebody was actually poisoning me. You know, I made him a double crust pizza, you know, putting two doughs together, But in between, I had loaded it full of anchovies and rolled it out, and then I knew what his favorite toppings were. I don't know what they are today, but I knew it at the time, so I made put all of his favorite toppings on it so he could not resist it. And then I had one of the phone help there, you know, said, offer Eric this piece of pizza. He looks hungry, you know. So he's, oh, my favorite pizza. He bit into it and got a mouthful of anchovies. So there.
Yeah, I would quite often put, well, I shouldn't say quite often, but every now and then into his Coca-Cola, because we would always have a quart there with our name on it then. That's what you drank when you had a chance to drink something. And so one day I put a bunch of hot pepper juice in there, and he drank it and was not happy with it at all. You know, just coughed and coughed and coughed, but went right back to work.
Had to keep on going.
And, yeah, and I thought, well, maybe I didn't put enough in, so I kept upping the percentages, and he still kept swallowing it and living. And I thought, well, one day I had the right amount in there, and he went over to he had fooled me. He said, "Ha ha!" And he had this empty plastic milk jug full of water, and he went over and he started drinking the water. And he left the Coke alone. And I thought, oh, well, this is terrible. And after a few days, what goes in water and doesn't show up? It's white vinegar. So I made about a 50-50 mix. Unfortunately, Bob, for whatever reason, went over to his Coke and drank that and was coughing all over the place. In order to get rid of the horrible taste in his mouth, he walked to the water jug and really just drank it down, and the jug was collapsing. It's about half empty, and he really did not feel well after that.
I can imagine that would be a little rough.
Yeah.
My goodness.
But some of the other things, I mean, we had this one person who we weren't especially fond of, and whenever she would show up, we would always put dough patties on the headlights of her car, which would bake on, you know, when you turn them on. And
yeah, back then, the headlights were, again, you know, technology has changed. Back then, the headlights on your car would actually heat up, unlike today, yeah. And it would bake the dough patty onto the headlight. And God help anybody trying to chisel that off.
The hijinks of those days.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, we had such camaraderie and so much fun there that even during the day, before we went into work, we would chase each other in cars. And, you know, one time we got a bunch of eggs and we had an egg fight between two cars, you know.
All right. Some of the stories we can't tell. We're not going to tell. we probably shouldn't tell that one. Anyway, people might start pick up on these things.
Now, again, just to wrap up here, the gentleman who was, you know, kind of consequential here in the end of this business, Charlie, he has since went on and passed away.
Yes. And actually, we got a number today that we're number 27 if we wanted to get in line today to dance on his grave.
Is it that backed up at this point?
What is the significance of the 22 on the car?
That was Mike's birthday.
Ah.
Oh, very
and
nice.
And another logo change.
Then a little logo change there. And go, oh, yep. Yeah.
Now, there was free pizza delivery.
Free pizza delivery.
Free pizza delivery under 30 minutes. What a great thing. So right over here on Delaware Avenue.
Yeah, I mean, and I got a note here. You mentioned Charlie again. And his
does he have any family?
Yes, but we won't go there. But I'm manager of Finley one night up there, and he comes in delivering the paychecks, you know, on a Thursday, bringing the paychecks for the Friday. And he said, you know, also, Bob, we owe for the gas bill.
Oh.
And we need to pay the gas bill tomorrow, otherwise it's going to get turned off. And this is our, you know, this is our livelihood. You can't cook pizza without a gas oven. And he gave me the bill and said, you need to go in and pay this tomorrow. And the bill was something like $400 or $500, you know, which is low, but that it was high. It was greater than our cash sales that night in Finley, which, you know, like I said, always did poorly. And so I had to borrow money. I had to take all the money out of the store that night and borrow money in order to get the gas bill paid the next day and stand in line, you know, for all the deadbeats and getting that bill paid in Finley there. And just so that we could operate that night. And that was just kind of an example of the things that he would do, that he couldn't mail in the bill a week earlier with a stamp or something like that. He, you know, And actually, he meant to bring in a check, but he forgot to bring his checkbook. He said, Bob, you got to scrape together all the cash and pay the bill.
Now, we did say his name. What was his last name for people who might remember him?
Adams.
Charlie Adams. You remember that name, George? Do you remember him being a difficult fellow around town? Apparently, he had a little difficulties.
Some, but not hazardous or anything. Just
a little problematic from time to time. Yeah. So how's the pizza, George?
I'm enjoying every bite of this. This is really great.
Yeah. Isn't this fun?
Oh, this is fun.
Now, this pizza has not been on sale since 84, 83?
In Marion, the last year was 83.
83.
In Columbus was 85.
So almost 40 years.
I remember I got married in 83. That was our wedding. Joanne and I got married in 83. I remember that.
Very delicious pizza here this morning. George Kasotis is with us. And again, we're going to save these pizzas today, and we'll give them to people who do shows on the station today, or if anybody wants to drop by or has a question. The phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. Give us a buzz here.
Pizzas over there.
I do. We're gonna pass them out today.
And I mentioned we had a surprise.
Oh, yes.
I don't want to wait till the last minute.
Okay.
Things get away.
Yeah.
Time. But I've been a regular listener to your show since August now when we were on, and I've heard you mention Tony Pacos a number of times.
Oh, yes.
And how that you were not able to sign a Tony Paco sub, you know, the man with the golden voice that others did, but not you.
Right.
And so we prepared for you a special pizza dough.
Oh.
And a pen so that you can sign the very first pizza dough.
Number one.
So I'll pass that over to you.
Thank you.
And we'll get a picture later on. You can post that there. But
we will do that.
So this is.
What is this pizza dough made of?
Just regular pizza dough.
Oh, this is just regular pizza dough.
Are there anchovies inside?
No, there are no anchovies. And so we will get back and shellac it and stick it on the wall somewhere.
Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't explode. That was one of Bob's favorite.
This is one of the.
Me,
all right. Yeah,
that
the first
was one
person.
I found a gag store somewhere that would sell what they called cigarette loads, which are little spikes of wood that would explode like popcorn in a cigarette. And since Eric was a smoker, I always loaded his packs full of these. And the only trouble is that they just explode in my car. And
there we go.
Every time he'd smoke in my car, they'd blow up and I'd get all these cigarette ashes all over my car.
Well, see, who needs Tony Pacos, George? I just signed the first pizza dough.
And we'll get a picture here before we leave.
Yes, yes.
Tony Paco married the quarterback for Ohio State University back in the 30s or 40s, late 30s, early 40s, Les Horvath. Yeah. His sister was married to Tony Paco.
Oh, is that right?
That's right. The first Heisman Trophy winner for Ohio State football team. You don't remember the name Les Horvath?
That was a little while ago, George.
Oh, that's...
I'm from Columbus. I know Les.
He knows him.
Not personally,
Bob
but
knows him.
I know of Les.
Tony Paco married Les's sister.
You know, George, there's a whole book here on this shop. Isn't that interesting?
It's very interesting. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
It's fascinating, and we've given away these books, and people are very interested in it.
It's available at the Marion Historical Society and their bookstore, as well as at Three Pies Hot at Yahoo, threepieshot@yahoo.com, something like that.
Tony Paco sent that on the MASH, the TV show. Remember that? Who was that guy, that crazy guy?
Klinger.
Jamie Farr.
Yeah.
He said, we used to get these foods from Tony Paco's.
The great Tony Paco's.
Why? Now, where will this pizza dough hang?
Well, my wife will probably find a special place for it on the wall somewhere.
That's good. And we'll take a picture of it and hang it right up here in the studio along with the other memorabilia.
Hopefully out of reach of the dog.
That's good. Yeah, you don't want the dog to chew that up with that on there. When we look back on this, we're going to play those commercials one day. The commercials were interesting. What do you remember about the commercials?
They were produced locally by the talent there at WDIF, the old WDIF in the 70s. I thought they were a little convoluted. You know, they were just very busy with background noise, and I didn't like the main characters in the commercials because I thought it was a little denigrating. You know, I grew up in the era, you don't call people stupid on the radio, you know, and you don't say, oh, you're so dumb, things like that. And I didn't like it for that purpose. you know. But other than that, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, they got the message across.
Did people say, I heard the ad, I'm coming in?
I don't ever recall anybody saying that.
So those were not effective.
But I know at one point in time, you know, and, you know, after we had left in the leaner days and you needed a good meal, we would, you know, call the manager at the store at that time and pretend to be a WDIF disc jockey and say, look, I'll play your commercial if you send me over free pizza. So we'd con the manager into sending out a free pizza, and we'd be sitting there at the back door of WDIF intercepting these pizzas, you know, and they never caught on that they were giving them away to old employees.
Now, this is interesting. There was a grand opening. Now, what store is this that I'm looking at here? It's behind Dunkin' Donuts on 161.
That would be the first Columbus store.
First Columbus store. Now, they got an interesting note here in the ad that says, we're not in the phone book, so don't lose our number or call information. You remember, it used to cost to call information, George. You remember those days?
Well, the manager at the time, Bill.
Yeah, 4 cents.
He got the great idea that, you know, he would have stickers made up, self-adhesive stickers that you could then put on your phone or whatever, so that our number would always be there. But he didn't do any research in it. And so he said, this is the number for the fire, the police, and, you know, poison control, which I don't know why he'd put that on an ad, but poison control, and then our number, you know, for pizza. And it turned out the poison control number was the competing Domino's in the neighborhood, and he didn't know that because he misread their own ads. And so he had like 10,000 of these stickers being printed up, and before he could start passing them out, you know, I pointed out to him, I said, I called a number, and he goes, oh, damn, and he had to throw them all out.
Planning is everything, isn't it?
Then explain to Charlie, you know, what he spent all that money on when there's no stickers around.
How many free pizzas do you think he gave away because of the delivery time? Not many?
I'm thinking probably less than 2 or 3% over, at least during my tenure. I mean, it wasn't very many. If we just barely missed the mark, we'd give him a free quart of cola or something like that, or maybe knock a dollar off or something like that. Most people were happy to get, you know, cola or a dollar off. And it was only after it turned like 45 minutes to an hour, you know, and if it was cold or something like that, we'd give it to them free or something. But not very many.
Now, if for people who don't have access to this pizza today, what would you most liken it to pizza-wise?
The one that I remember, I don't know if they're still doing it, but it would be Godfather's. Just because of, you know, the chunky toppings and everything and the richness of the toppings. And we had a hierarchy here to making the pizza. You know, you'd put on your dough and then your sauce and just a little sprinkle of cheese, you know, maybe, you know, a couple of tablespoons. But then you'd go with your veggies. You go with your raw onion and green pepper. They go in there because they would then cook into the sauce. And then your flatter cooked meats, pepperoni, ham, mushrooms, whatever, and on the very top you'd have your raw meats, your sausage, your Italian sausage, or your ground beef, and so they would be on the top there cooking, and so and they would then fully cook by the time, and using that hierarchy, you'd have just a well layered pizza with everything cooking with, you know, it's in the appropriate environment, everything there. And so,
what advice would you give to somebody starting a business?
It's a lot of hard work, but it can be rewarding. I got a text here earlier, but it was probably harder to start a pizza shop today because, you need to have expensive hoods over the ovens that would have fire extinguishers in them and water and everything, and the hood itself might cost you $20,000. And we opened the whole store for $20,000. Back in that day, you just needed to have, you know, the hood with a fan in it and pulling, you know, the heat out. And so it's more expensive. Then we didn't have a refrigeration unit on the make line when we first opened, but we got it a little bit later. But you have to, you know, what they call a LERN unit, the LERN, to refrigerate everything. And then the ovens were...
And then, of course, the sheet of asbestos on top of the oven.
Oh, yes. We had one manager, Bill, because we'd carry these things in hot bags, like we had over there, to keep them warm. And so we'd toss them on the oven to keep everything warm. That way you could deliver, you know, the warm pizza in a warm hot bag and get it to the door. But if they sat there too long, it might start to burn. And so Bill got the bright idea of putting asbestos blankets on top of the oven. And we had, you know, some health conscious, you know, people say, no, asbestos is deadly. You can't have that in the store. But this is the day before internet. You can't look that up. You can't, you know, go out and get a report on that. And no one's going to spend their time at the library. And Charlie wouldn't take anybody's word for it unless he saw it in print, you know. And even then, he'd discount it. He said, no, asbestos is a good idea. It saves us money. We don't have to keep replacing these, you know, hot bags, you know. And one day, you know, Eric's working in the back of the store in the commissary, and Charlie kind of chewed him out for something, probably keeping things, you know, too clean or something, I don't know. And Eric was a little upset, you know, and he was always on the side of getting rid of the asbestos, but he didn't know how to do it. But at the front of the store, the health inspector, and Bill's dealing with the health inspector and going through everything, and nice remarks, everything's going well. But Eric kind of sees his opportunity here to both get rid of the asbestos and get back at Charlie and everybody else. He goes, and he says this in like a real innocent manner, "Hey, Bill, are there any more of these asbestos blankets for when the next store opens?" And the health inspector goes, "What? Oh, these asbestos blankets, they're good, you know." And Bill tried to talk the health inspector into the good virtues of asbestos, and the guy said, "No, you get these out of the shop right now. I'm going to close you down right now." And so Bill went, pack them all up and run them out to the dumpster. And that was the end of the asbestos there in the stores. But thanks to Eric and his nimble thinking at the time.
Took care of it.
You know, great race pizza reminds me of the human race, but also 1942, I was taking flour, oil, and water and making pita bread for my gyros or the gyros.
Oh, my.
I was making pita bread back then. When you guys were making, well, you weren't there in 42, no. But you were making pizza dough, and I was making pita dough.
We got to get the story in quickly of the animal in the freezer.
Scotty's dead dog.
Charlie used to tell this story. He was aware of this.
He was aware of it, but only on the negative side of things. He hated it when he learned out about it. But in Findlay, there was a semi-popular pizza restaurant called Scotty's Pizzeria, and Scotty was a hunter, and one day one of his prized hunting dogs died, and so in order to get him ready for, I guess, the taxidermist, who might have been closed or something, I don't know, he puts the dog in his freezer in the back, and so the dog's frozen in the back, in a bag, I'm sure, and comfortable, but in with all the other foodstuffs, and
being dead and in the back of a freezer sounds very comfortable.
Perfect.
And Scotty had a small dining room up front there, and apparently there was a birthday party going on, and somebody was having a birthday party, and they were filming it with an old video camera about the size of what you have here, a big thing. And so they'd film this birthday party, and then there comes the health inspector, and they're going through the routine things, and, you know, checking things off in the front, and everything's good, you know, and they go in the back, and they find a dead dog in the freezer.
Yeah, dead dog in the restaurant.
Thank goodness. The health inspector drags it out, and they're getting this, the guy, right before America's Funniest Videos, he's filming this on his video camera for his daughter's birthday party, and so he's filming it, and the health inspector dragging this dead dog out, and it's massive news in Marion. Not Marion, Findlay, in Findlay. And so Scotty is closed down that night and never to reopen. But about a week, 2 weeks later, in comes two chumps from Marion, Charlie and Mike. They're looking to buy a place. And they thought, well, this place just closed, you know, for whatever. We don't know why. We're out of town. And Scotty, who bore a resemblance to Charlie, you know, so everybody mistook him later on, Scotty convinces him that he's retiring and moving, you know, to Alaska or whatever, you know, and going hunting and to buy his restaurant, you know. And so they made a deal, like, within 2 hours. And so Scotty sold the Findlay restaurant to Charlie and Mike, and they were unaware of the history or anything like that. They didn't do any checking on that. And they thought, oh, we're getting a great location, a great store, and a great albatross around their neck.
Where did the dog go? Did they just throw it out?
Well, not us, because we weren't there.
But the dog was already gone. This became a big lore story. Charlie Evers used to tell this story on the air. It got around.
You know, I'm assuming they cremated them or put them in the pizza oven. I do not know what happened to the dog, though.
George, this never would have flown with the health inspector. Would it have dead dogs in the freezer?
Oh, not at all. Wow, that would have been out of this world.
You and George Turoff didn't pull that sort of thing, did you?
Not at all, not at all.
That going on in downtown Mary. Well, the time has flown by again. We're going to invite Eric and Bob back again because this is fun. And if we'll do a show at an evening sometime because I think pizza goes better for dinner than breakfast. But we'll work that out. We're going to have a lot of fun here. You know, George, we always have pizza at our Christmas party and every year and our anniversary party. So maybe we'll put it in an order.
Well, is that good with Michelle? I heard she's,
Yeah, Michelle. Well, you know, Michelle said she was going to stop by this morning. I don't know what happened to her. She'll get a piece of pizza. I'll make sure she gets one.
I think she's still on the fence about this whole Christmas thing.
Well, if she falls through, you guys will be right there with the pizza.
All right.
I know. I don't understand what she's holding. All I need some stuff for this big bus tour coming up. Did you hear about this, George?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to be a part of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. George can sing the Christmas tunes. So it's going to be big. But thank you both for coming. And we'll have books starting tomorrow morning. We'll do trivia again. Or if anybody wants a book, give me a buzz and we'll see what we can work out for you. But it's always fun to do this. And thanks so much for making the pizzas today. They are delicious.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Bob Welsh and Eric Warren. Again, the book is Three Pies Hot, the story of the Great Race Pizza Shop here in Marion, George. It's so good to see you.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to be here with you.
For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
740-387-9050. Programs on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are brought to you by Williams Grass Cutters. Telephone number 740.